Pop goes. We might say the meanest things. Pop goes. Sometimes we're not much company. There's no rearranging. Our writing remains the same. We remain the same. And as far as we're concerned, Pop goes. You belong to us. Pop goes.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to episode 8 of the Pop Does podcast. I'm Dave Lifton, and for the first time since January, we are guest-free today. After our first two attempts, people apparently are no longer returning our calls. And to be honest, I really can't blame them after the abuse that the three of us have heaped on our guests in those episodes. And by the three of us, I'm not talking about the explicit lyrics version of a hit by Grover Washington Jr. and Bill Withers, but rather myself and my co-hosts, Jeff Giles and Jason Hare. Gentlemen.
Sup, fuckers?
Ooh, that was in stereo.
Oh, did it come in the same time on your end? Because I definitely beat you.
It blew my mind.
The recording will reveal that I beat you to the sup, fuckers, this month. So suck it, Jeff Giles.
I let you have that one.
You didn't let me have it. You're just slow.
Sometimes I feel bad for you.
No, you're getting old. I think it's you're getting old and you're getting old and you're on a delay and Like, no, I don't mean like a technical sound delay. I mean like a mental delay. It's a deficiency.
I haven't had my first beer yet today.
What are you talking about? It's 11:15 in the morning.
He was with his in-laws. He's got to be good.
I have to pretend. Plus, all day yesterday, I was at a kids' music festival. So.
Were you really?
Yeah, I'm a little hollowed out mentally after all that kids.
You're starting
stuff.
A new label?
Starting a new label now.
Anything good come from that?
It was kind of fun. It was, you know, have you ever been to Northampton, Mass?
I haven't.
It is a, it's kind of a, how best to describe this town?
It's a very hippie, artsy town.
Yeah, it is. And also not a lot of heterosexuals there.
Yeah.
So.
I would have fit right in.
Yeah. it's this festival, really pretty cool, called The Meltdown, that is hosted by the local radio station. And because Pop Dose has its spinoff kids entertainment site, Dad Nabbit, that most of our readers probably aren't aware of.
For which I am the managing editor as well.
Right, that's right, that's right. They've been trying to get me to come out for the last couple of years, and now my kids are old enough that I feel like I could trust them with a 90-minute car ride and a full day of kids' music. So we got in the car and we drove out there. It was fun.
And how did they like it?
They liked it, but it's in a middle school, and there are always at least two performances going on at the same time, and there was a circus in the gym. And there was SpongeBob SquarePants there, so there's just a lot going on all the time. And
there's a lot going on behind you.
Yeah. Who's dragging a dead body down the stairs?
That is not behind me. That's upstairs. I'm in the basement trying to get away from my kids. As you can see, it isn't working very well.
Who the fuck is that? Shut up!
I know. I need a broom, right? It's like a bang on the ceiling. Isn't that what you do?
Is that Owen or is that Owen or Sophie?
Impossible to tell. Maybe it's my father-in-law.
So at this festival, was there a were there any kids with Dan Zane's tattoos?
No kids with Dan Zane's tattoos. Dan Zane's wasn't there.
Okay.
Lori Berkner.
No tattoos. Lori Berkner. God, how I hate Lori Berkner.
Speaking of banging noises behind you. This is a good story. You can choose to edit this out if you want. I'll try to keep it real quick. But our apartment building, or our three-family house that we live in, is attached to another building on the other side of the slab of concrete. And the people on the third floor on our side, like opposite us on the other side of the concrete, are having really loud sex all the time. Like 11 o'clock at night, 2 a.m, and again at 6 a.m, and they're keeping us up all hours. And so a couple of weeks ago, I actually got angry enough that I yelled across the thing. I yelled, "Shut up! We can hear you!" And they kind of giggled, and it stopped for a little while, and then they started again a night or two ago. So yesterday I was getting out to run some errands, and I saw some people in the driveway next door, and I said, "Hey, are you guys from the third floor?" And they said, "Yeah." I said, "Hey, I'm also from the third floor on my side." I said, "There's no real good way to say this, but you guys got to cool it with the sex." And I tried to be very friendly about it, and they like oh, it gets better, Jeff. The girlfriend went inside right before this conversation had started, but the guy was there. And I was like, you really got to cool it. I said, listen, and I was trying to be friendly about it, like to make it kind of silly. I didn't want to be a jerk. I said, listen, I know you guys love getting it on. I said, you guys love getting it on. We love getting it on. Everybody loves getting it on, but you're getting it on is keeping us up at all hours of the night. I said, and the people on the second floor below us, they have a baby. So, you know, they love getting it on, but you're keeping them up. Their sleep is very valuable to them. I said, so, you know, I said, she's screaming so loud. Is she okay? I said, because sometimes she sounds like she's hurt. And he was turning red, but he was giggling. Like, I could tell I could make these kinds of jokes. And he's like, no, everybody's fine. He's like, we'll just have to improve our timing. I said, listen, on my end, we're rooting for you. We're holding up scorecards over on our side. But seriously, like, you just, can she bite a pillow or something? And I'm not, I swear to you, this is not an exaggerated story. I actually told it, I actually said everything exactly like I said this. And his friend was with him, and he's like, your neighbors are really cool. He's like, you should invite them over when you guys are having sex. I said, listen, I know you guys heard me yell through the wall a few weeks ago, and I really don't want to do that again. Or, you know, I don't want to, like, have to call the cops, but please, like, you know, I'm all for you with your sex life. Good for you. But please be quiet. Oh, there they are having it, doing it again.
Your neighbors or my stupid kids?
Well, I was going to pretend it was my neighbors when it's actually your stupid kids. I don't know if that story is going to make the podcast, but I thought
No way in hell I'm editing that out.
Okay, good.
It's a great story.
Well, the funny thing is I left the apartment, and I was really pleased with myself. I was like, all right, you know, I managed to broach the subject with them in a way that didn't make me a jerk. And I, you know, I kind of wanted to shame them a little. So I went out.
You're going to be a perfect parent.
I came back home, and Jessica was just waking up because she works the night shift. So it was like 4:30 in the afternoon, and I woke her up. I woke her up, and I told the story, and they started having sex again. Right as I was telling this, and like the girl is screaming her freaking head off, and Jessica's like, "You can't yell at them. It's, you know, it's 4:30 on a Saturday. Like, they're not expecting people." I don't know. Listen, granted, I'm older now. Jessica and I have been together a very long time. You know, I remember those days, but these guys are ridiculous.
You should start playing Paradise by the Dashboard Light the next time they...
Well, it's funny that you say that, because I actually thought that what I was going to do, if they did it again, is I was going to take my little, my Bose sound dock, put it against the wall, and play Copacabana on repeat. I just thought, like, let me just play some Barry Manilow for them and see if that knocks them out of the mood. Actually, the guy's name is Alex. Next time I hear them, I'm going to start chanting. I'm going to start being like, Alex, Alex, Alex. There he is right now.
Are these at least attractive people?
Absolutely not.
Oh, see, that's the worst thing. The worst thing was confronting them, because if they're ugly, then, you know, now you can actually picture them having sex.
Well, the guy's name is Alex. He has long blonde hair, and when I first met him, I didn't know if he was a guy or a girl.
Rebel, rebel.
What'd you say?
I said rebel, rebel.
Sorry, I can't hear you over those incessant kids.
Come do something about it, please. They like you. They'll listen to you. Come on over.
Yeah, they got to listen to Uncle Jason. Because he brings them candy, even though they're taller than he is.
Bring some soundproofing material.
I brought something for Sophie. What did I bring? I wanted to bring some music stuff, and you warned me that I would not be welcome in your house if I brought anything that made noise.
I think we have a picture of you during your first visit on the couch, covered up to your eyes in Sophie's stuffed animals.
Aww.
No, I covered her in the stuffed animals.
Oh, okay.
Wasn't that it? I made her like a little stuffed animal fort.
I was hoping it was the other way around.
I'm a good uncle.
Well, we also have some unfinished business from the last episode.
We do.
Yes. Jason, you said that you had a story about a certain rock star.
Oh, that's right. That's right. My Dennis DeYoung story.
Yes.
This is a very quick story, but I wanted to share it with you guys because I thought you'd find it interesting. And I did a teaser for this with Dave. I was like, I got to tell you this great story for the podcast. And he's like, does it involve Dennis DeYoung being an asshole? And I said, well, no, not really, but it is kind of related. So I have an acting acquaintance of mine, a friend of a friend or whatever, and he's part of 101 Dalmatians, the musical that's either out or touring or coming to Broadway or Madison Square Garden or something soon. He's one of the characters in the show. And all that music is written by Dennis DeYoung. All the 101 Dalmatians music. He did the thing for it. I guess he wants to be like Elton John or Phil Collins.
He's done a few things like that.
Failing miserably. Anyway, so apparently at like one of the first meetings, Dennis DeYoung had like this little pep talk meeting with the cast, and he said something about how, you know, he understands that the strains of singing night after night, all this stuff can really get you, and it really can hurt your voice. And he said, and what's always worked for me, and I swear to you I'm not making this up, what's always worked for me is a very specific suppository.
Oh, no.
That I buy. So he goes, so as a gift to you all, he's like, you'll find the suppositories in your dressing room.
Wait, is that the end of the story? He wasn't joking?
That's it. No, he wasn't joking. Oh, he seriously bought suppositories for the cast. That's the story. So that's why, Dave, I said it kind of relates to him being an asshole.
So there's his secret. That's how his voice has remained so whatever it is.
I thought his wife just stuck her hand up his ass. He uses suppositories. How do you think that works to make your voice better?
Well, then she would be giving him the courage and the strength he needs.
You're full of lyrical references today, Dave.
I wonder if he gets a picture of Tommy Shaw kind of silkscreened on the suppository before he shoves it up there. Just for that added little bit of inspiration.
Oh, that's good. Fuck Tommy Shaw. And the minute he told the story, I was like, I know the two guys I have to tell this story to. Well, thank you for remembering, Dave.
Yeah, I was going to say my pleasure, but...
Right, that's not sure anymore. Now.
Yeah.
I know you so badly wanted it to be like a story of him being an absolute jerk, but right. It is related to assholes. So...
Okay, so we're a few weeks into spring now, and that means that Easter is almost upon us. Personally, I celebrate the holiday by going to the drugstore on Easter Monday and scooping up chocolate at half price. But,
we can tell.
Yeah, well, it hasn't happened yet.
Well, no, I've seen the effects from last year's binge. Year's post-Easter binge. You with chocolate and marshmallow peeps all over your mouth mumbling, thank you, Jesus.
It sounded like Michael McDonald.
A retarded Michael McDonald. Anyway, sorry.
Anyway, at PopDus, we wanted to acknowledge the holiday in our own special way. So we're going to talk about pop culture resurrections. People are things that went away for a while and came back. Some were stronger than ever, and then there were those who maybe should have decided to stay hidden. And since we've already heard way too much from Jason today, we will start with Jeff.
Right on. Yeah, I love this topic. I'm fascinated with pop culture comebacks. It used to happen in music a lot more often than it does. I actually did a feature for Bullseye on bands that managed to re-reach the top 40 years after they'd been forgotten. But it seems like that... I think the last person who did it successfully may have been Cher. I can't think of anybody who's done it since then.
Johnny Cash.
Johnny Cash, well.
Yeah, he's on my list.
maybe not at the same height that that Cher did in '88, where I could turn back time, but certainly people kind of remembered how great he was, and it was definitely an artistic success. And mm-hmm. you know, in the last 10 years of his life, he got to see his credibility restored, which is pretty amazing.
No, that's absolutely correct. It's just that the particular era that I grew up in, when I think of musical comebacks, I think of people having to sell out to get back on the charts.
Right.
Actually, Cher's a pretty impressive example, because you're not only talking about Cher's 88 comeback, but you're talking about her 98 comeback.
Exactly.
Yeah. She had two.
Here's one on my list. Donny Osmond.
Mm-hmm. Ah!
One of the biggest, most unlikely, and least welcome comebacks in my lifetime.
But I would give him credit for a very smart, or his label credit for a very smart comeback.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what we're talking about, Dave? You remember how they did this?
Yes, Soldier of Love, and it was like here's a mystery song. We're not going to tell you who it is. Just judge it just on the merits of the song.
And yet, it was still a hit.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like it fit into the era. What was that, 88?
Yeah, I think so.
I feel like that fit into the era, the kind of music that was getting played on the radio at the time.
Very
just
much so.
Just kind of insightful on his record company's part to be like, if we put this out as Donny Osmond, nobody's going to buy it.
Yeah, and then another company tried it with Boy George in 95, and it didn't work. It might have even been the same company. I don't remember.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that was when I was working in the store. It was basically like, although I think they said, "Don't tell this is who it is, but don't tell anybody."
Yeah, that works.
So, yeah.
Jason, you ever think about doing a Soldier of Love or Sacred Emotion in your gigs?
Actually, Soldier of Love is not a bad choice. I'm willing to fight.
You could do Sacred Emotion as a, reggae tune or something. Mix it up a little bit.
I don't remember that one. Was that the follow-up?
I don't know which came first. They're both awful.
I don't remember Sacred Emotion. I mean, I'm sure if I heard it, I would remember it. But I definitely remember Soldier of Love. I remember when that was a big deal on the radio stations in New York. They were like, we can't tell. It's a mystery artist. And then everybody found out, and it was like, oh.
Yeah, and then the follow-up record tanked.
Right, exactly.
I got an email from a publicist this last week saying that it was a really long email. I just kind of glossed over it. But the gist of it was that his new philosophy was that instead of working bands the traditional way and sending out pitches for records and artists the traditional way, what he was going to start doing was just putting music up on a website and sending out emails telling people like us to go and check it out with no artist name or anything attached, just the music.
Well, that's not a bad idea. I mean, it's something different.
No, it's a good idea. It just made me think of Donny Osmond. I didn't tell him that. But
it'd be funny if the publicist was like, we're going to take the Donny Osmond approach here.
Well, I think the person who really set the standard for the pop culture resurrection in the music industry in that time that we were growing up was Tina Turner, though.
That's exactly who. That was my top list, my top person for amazing music comeback.
Because I think that for the most part, the story of Tina Turner coming back is better than the majority of the music that she made. What's Love Got to Do with It? Private Dancer, fantastic, undeniably. But after that, I really don't need to hear anything else of her newer, of her post comeback work.
Not a fan of Better Be Good to Me.
But that was on the Private Dancer record, wasn't it?
Yes, I thought you were talking about the song itself.
No, I meant the album. I'm tired of Simply the Best played at every sporting event after after every championship sporting event after We Are the Champions.
It didn't, if memory serves, I think Bonnie Tyler cut that song before Tina Turner did, which makes it even worse.
Simply the Best?
Yeah.
Is it a Jim Steinman? Well, it can't be a Jim Steinman song because it doesn't have 8 words in the title.
It's not 18 minutes long.
Yeah.
With parentheses in the title. No, I think Bonnie Tyler could have first. So that means that some producer was like, hey, you know, some other gravelly voiced female singer cut this song, and you could probably do the same thing. So let's just...
They probably used the same arrangement, too. The same backing track.
Bonnie Tyler released it in 1988. However, it says here... Oh, no, never mind. That's a 92 version. But yeah, the 88, yeah. It was written by Mike Chapman and Holly Knight.
Oh, great.
There you go, Mike Chapman.
Holly Knight, who also wrote... They also wrote Better Be Good to Me and Love is a Battlefield. And I think Holly Knight wrote a lot of stuff for rock bands like Aerosmith. And
Mike Chapman was Chin and Chapman, who did Sweet.
Right.
Those guys were kind of the poor man's Steinberg and Kelly.
Kelly, I was talking about them last night.
Oh, God, why?
Did it include the phrase, fuck that guy?
No, I love those two guys. I think
who are you with that even knew who they were?
I was with Michael Parr last night.
Oh, yeah.
But I was talking to my buddy Raz was with us, too, and I was talking to him about...
Fellow Popdos writer Michael Parr.
Right, yes, Michael Parr. I think I mentioned him. I think I said to him, I've mentioned him like every podcast. We were talking about cover albums or something like that. We got into some argument, and I was trying to explain to Raz that sometimes a song that you think is an original is actually not an original. It's a cover, but you just didn't know it.
Is this your stupid theory?
Which stupid theory? I have a lot of stupid theories.
That if the writer records the song after somebody else, that he's covering himself.
Oh, I remember we got into this, didn't we?
Yeah, because you're wrong.
A couple of years ago? I can't get into this because I can't remember exactly how the argument went down, but I'll try to remember it for the next podcast. No, I was arguing, you know, I had, you guys, well, Dave, you listen to Coverville, right?
Of course.
Yeah, Coverville's the awesome podcast, and every once in a while, Brian does he does Originalville. Where he plays the original version where you know the cover better. So I was talking about, I used Alone by Heart as an example of a song where most people would think that was a Heart song, but it was originally by Steinberg and Kelly and their band I-10.
Here's my take on it. If he plays the, if it's just a professional hack songwriter that records like the demo and gives it to the other person and then records it, it's not so much a cover as it is the songwriter trying to capitalize on the song's own success, like the Burt Bacharach and Jimmy Webb albums.
Sure, yeah, that isn't what we were talking about when we argued.
But were the Steinberg-Kelly records really just glorified demos? I mean, were they signed to a label? Did they...
No, yeah, they were signed to a label. It was 83, yeah. They were on, hold on, I'm looking it up. It doesn't... Epic, in 83.
Okay, then that is a cover.
Yeah.
But if they recorded after they became successful, then it's just cheap.
Right. I'll send you the version of Alone.
No, it's okay. You don't need to.
Quickly, Dave's like, no, that's all right.
I'm good. Yeah.
Too late. Hey, you know who I have on my list?
Your Kiss?
No.
Heart.
Sheriff.
What? Oh, Sheriff. Oh.
Sheriff. Do you remember Sheriff, Dave?
I remember seeing it. I remember, what is it, Heart and Sheriff created a band, Alias, half of the rhythm section of Heart.
Yeah.
The guys, yeah.
Yeah, Sheriff was a Canadian band that released When I'm With You in like 82 or 83 or something like that. And it became a hit in 88.
Yep.
Because a New York DJ started playing it and it was suddenly a hit.
That was the time all kinds of songs did that. In fact, if we're talking about pop culture comebacks, we should be talking about your friend Benny Mardonis.
Benny Mardonis, right? I knew you were going to go there. That's right. Into the Night had quite a comeback.
How many versions of that song has he recorded at this point?
I'm sure he's recorded it more than once, but I think the only one that I'm really familiar with I'm not so sure he re-recorded it. I don't know if he did like an Into the Night 97 or something.
Why don't you go to your CD collection and...
Why don't you take one of Dennis DeYoung's suppositories and shove it right up your ass and then start singing Babe.
a few weeks ago, I had a job interview, and Jason asked me how it went, and I didn't get it, and Jason said that to get back at them, he was going to send them a whole bunch of Penny Pardone CDs.
I'm just looking for somebody I can send those Benny Bardone CDs to.
It's kind of our gold standard for fucking with somebody now, isn't it?
It was your original dick move. It was the first example of you spending money on something for me to be a jerk.
I was trying to be helpful.
Let's go back and tell the story of that, because that's just too funny.
I don't even know why this. What were you doing? You were.
It was a chart attack, wasn't it?
It was a mellow gold. I was writing about Into the Night, and I was showing you all the. I don't know how you wound up buying them all for me,
because they were all like 10 cents on Amazon. It was easy.
Yeah, it was funny because it showed up. It showed up, and it was like the guy who you bought them from screwed up the order. So it was five Benny Mardone CDs and like a classical compilation featuring Angels on the cover. And I was like, now I'm just confused.
The best part is that at the time your packages were being sent to your parents' house because your mailbox is so small at your house. And so like you'd bump into your mom and she'd say, oh, look, I got all this mail for you. And you'd get a little excited and tear open the packages.
Yes.
Fucking Benny Mardone.
Often in front of her, I'd open them up. I'd open up the package and just be like, oh, damn it.
So, Jeff, basically what you're saying is that Jason was unable to handle big packages.
Yes. But with training and time.
And a Dennis DeYoung approved suppository.
Do you still have those CDs or did you purge them?
Yeah. No, I have them.
Ah, that's awesome. I love that.
I have them somewhere.
I'm going to sleep like a baby tonight.
All the other shit you've sent me.
They're in a box with a bow around it.
I love sending Jason CDs. What was the last one? Was it the Judy Collins Christmas album? Was that the last one I sent you?
No, it wasn't Judy Collins. It was the woman from General Hospital. Jeannie Francis, is that her name?
Yeah.
She put out a Christmas album.
And Jeff bought it. I don't know if the joke is the joke on me or is the joke on you.
It's a joke on everyone because it's going to be for next Melamus. Right? They came too late this year, didn't it?
Yeah, it did come too late.
I think I found out about it either right before or right after Christmas, and I knew I had to do it. And the best thing is that it's part of Amazon's on-demand program, right? Where it's printed up.
They burn a CDR.
Yeah, on a CDR.
Yeah, like they don't, right, they wait until someone orders it and then they manufacture it because it's not worth doing it ahead of time.
And I don't even think it was that cheap. I think it was like 15 bucks or something.
This shows your commitment to a joke. You have no problem dropping 15 bucks.
Well, imagine the Melamus post that will result from the Jeannie Francis Christmas album.
I can only imagine. We're getting way off topic from our pop culture resurrections here.
Has Jeannie Francis ever had a pop culture comeback? Can we tie this in somehow?
Well, obviously the album was.
Yeah, the album.
How many resurrections have probably been done through Christmas records?
Well, that's a good question. Michael McDonald.
Because that is such a part of what inspired Melamus, was these people who were doing these grabs to try to restore some... get their name back in the spotlight.
But did they ever work?
Michael McDonald worked.
Yeah, I guess that's true. But he was riding his Motown comeback.
No, man. The first Christmas record came out before that.
Was that the Hallmark one?
No, the first one came out on MCA. And I think that was the first time he'd had a record deal in at least 5 years. You know, he'd been off in the wilderness for a while. And he came up with a brilliant idea to record a Christmas record. And now he's done five or six of them in a race with Harry Connick.
Yeah. I've got somebody who you recently reviewed, and he's also had two comebacks. Neil Sedaka.
Do we count those as comebacks? Did he really come back?
Didn't he? He kind of did. He came back in the 70s, right?
Yeah, Laughter in the Rain. He was signed. That's what one of the things that you sadly... put back in my mind. was Laughter in the Rain in that post, and that it was basically, as you put it in your review of the new Neil Sedaka record, that it was Elton John doing it just because he could.
Proving that he could do whatever the hell he wanted. Yeah. Wasn't that the theme to your prom, Laughter in the Rain?
Well, it's old enough.
Did it? Didn't Sedaka, he had a hit in like 1980 or thereabouts with Peter Cetera doing a duet vocal, didn't he? I think he did.
Hey, really?
Something about When the Morning Comes or something to do with the morning. Let me see. I'm ashamed of myself for knowing this.
Wow.
But for those of you who didn't see this, then we'll have a link to it in the notes. Jeff has a great column called You Again, in which he reviews records made by people who you probably shouldn't. And he points out that Sedaka's record, you know, he's being very he had an American Idol night a couple of years ago, and he's kind of tried to parlay that into a resurrection of sorts.
Well, you know, if you get to promote your new album on the Mike Huckabee show, then you've really arrived. So I don't think we can dispute. Well, wasn't there some comment that somebody left on that review that somebody called me a really kind of silly name?
Was it Jason?
I don't think it was me.
It was something effective. How dare you, you know, besmirch the legacy of this great man or something like that.
I love when comments like that come up.
Jason started to write something, and he said, then I realized I was mixing up Sedaka and Paul Anka.
I still
That's
do.
That's what I did just now. It was Paul Anka that Peter Cetera did the song with. Yeah, they're the same guy, aren't they?
Wait, so I wrote, Anka and Sedaka aren't the same person? And then D.W. Dunphy writes, no, they are. Jason's just applying selective memory again, if only to block out the day that the fearsome Sedaka attacked Tokyo.
Sedaka. Neil Sedaka. Yeah, I was confused when Neil Sedaka came out with that new record recently, and I was like, why is there no mention of him co-writing that song with Michael Jackson? And it took me like a week to realize that that was Paul Anka.
Yeah, so there were a few people there who took you to task for ragging on treasure, national treasure, Neil Sedaka. And I wanted to
National treasure, that's right.
Yeah, because that's, I think, what Huckabee calls him in the thing.
Those are the best kinds of posts, the ones where people like are like, how can you speak that way about Dan Fogelberg?
Okay, I want to read something that Jeff wrote about the new Neil Sedaka record here, because it just is typical of Jeff's brilliance. I have to believe that the type of listeners who seeks out Sedaka's brand of corny escapism is probably looking for something that sounds like it was created with good old-fashioned production values, a la Barry and Barbara, rather than a chintzy album whose cover seems to depict a desperately jaunty man who knows his next car ride will be a surprise trip to an assisted living facility.
My wife thought that was a little below the belt.
But it's also true.
Thank you.
It's beautiful. Thank
you. It's very funny.
You know, you guys reminded me, Friday afternoon, I don't know if you noticed, I was listening to the new one from Rat, which probably fits in with this subject.
Yeah, because that's one that, well, why don't you talk about it?
Well, you know, honestly, I haven't really looked into it. I think it's the original lineup, or you know, however many of them are still alive, back together again. Again, I don't know a whole lot about the band, but I know there have been fights and lawsuits and different versions of Rat playing small clubs around the country.
And then the lawsuits left them all broke, so that they were left with no other alternative but to get back together.
Get back together again. But I was pleasantly surprised, man. It sounds like 1984 in the best possible way. I had to listen to it twice.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
In fact, and I said this also in public, I think I like it even more than the new Peter Wolf, which makes me very, very, very sad.
So who else?
All right. I kind of came to the conclusion that pretty much everyone who was on our list of rock and roll assholes could be on here.
Is that right?
Because
not Daryl Hall.
Yeah. See, I knew that you were going to go with Daryl Hall, and I was going to kind of repeat what I said in the very first episode, my kind of anti nostalgia as irony thing,
mm-hmm.
and how that's part of that. So rather than hear me repeat that, just put a link to the we'll link to the first episode in the show notes in case you are a fairly new listener to the show.
No, I think that's true. You know, what's funny about Hall & Oates is that they've had a comeback. You know, people have been saying persistently since, like, I don't know, 2002, maybe, whenever it was that they did the Behind the Music on them, that they're having a comeback. It just hasn't been a big enough comeback that people
have... I don't think they're having a comeback.
I don't either. But every time something happens, like the Behind the Music or the covers record that's out right now, the Burden to Be record, people always say, oh, it's Hall & Oates back in fashion.
No, I think people are consistently going to see them the same way that they always have since 1989 or whatever. I don't think their audience has really changed at all. I don't think they're necessarily gaining a lot of new fans or losing fans. But they've never had anything that came close to the success that they had from the late 70s up till 86.
Right, what I'm saying is that this covers album that just came out, that to me is my rant. an example of that.
But I love that album.
Well, of course you do.
Have you listened to it, Dave?
No. Like I said, I was never a Hall & Oates fan, although I was the other day after reading the review of it. Actually, it was on another of Brian Ibbett's podcasts, Today in Music History, where Rich Girl was the what year was this the number one song in. I listened to Rich Girl, She's Gone, and Sarah Smile, which are fantastic songs. And I think that I liked them, like those earlier songs, when they were a soul band with pop leanings as opposed to when they became a pop band with soul leanings.
Or whatever the hell they are now.
Yeah, I can see that.
You know, once they became, like Kiss on My List, Man Eater, like those are just, I can't listen to them.
Oh, I love those songs.
I prefer Negative Land's cover of Sarah Smile. Yeah, have you heard it? Where they mix the melody of Sarah, the backing track of Sarah Smile with the old Oscar Mayer jingle.
No!
I have to try and dig that up and I'll send it to you.
Yes, please. That's awesome.
Other Resurrections, the Eagles in 94 with the Hell Freezes Over thing.
But that's less of a comeback as it is a reunion. And
right,
I,
exactly.
I think that's where I'm getting... I think I got a little confused in this.
But that Hell Freezes Over album was huge. That wasn't number one album.
It was, but you have to wonder what would have happened if they had kept on making music.
Exactly. You know? I wouldn't consider it a comeback the same way I consider Tina Turner a comeback, because Tina Turner released albums, nobody bought them.
Right.
You know.
Okay.
Or Meatloaf.
That's on my list too, Jeff. Meatloaf.
Meatloaf?
Yeah, because, I mean, if you think about it, he released all these albums... pretty much all terrible.
Yep.
I have a number of them.
Oh, God, really?
In between Bad Out of Hell and Bad Out of Hell 2. I mean, that was a huge comeback for him. That was huge. Yeah, he released... oh, I could probably name at least three of them. Let's see. Bad Attitude. Blind Before I Stop. Midnight at the Lost and Found. Those are at least three.
Why do you have those?
I'll tell you why I had them, because when I was in high school, I had really never heard Meatloaf. I had never heard Bad Out of Hell, and the girl that I was dating in my junior year of high school loved Bad Out of Hell. It was like the album that they would play at camp or whatever it was. And so after that, I got really into Meatloaf, and I was like, you know me with like music I like, it's like, you find one album, you got to go get the rest. And it was like just regret after regret after regret.
And plus, this was the time when you had to like import those albums from Germany too.
Yes, exactly. You're so smart. You're so smart. Yeah, that's exactly right. They were all like crappy, albums I probably paid too much for, and they were all just so bad. In fact, one of them's got a duet with Cher. And one
How
of them,
can you tell?
And one of them has a duet with Roger Daltrey. And I wasn't even a Who fan at the time. But in any case, I think Meatloaf, that's an example of a really good comeback, because he released all these albums that were miserable. And, he went from playing places like The Garden to, The Bottom Line, like small little venues. And then suddenly turning around and playing The Garden again,
Well, it just shows that, one of the tricks to a successful pop culture resurrection is to repeat exactly the formula that worked the first time. And this was getting back together with that fucking asshole Jim Steinman. We have to always refer to him as that fucking asshole Jim Steinman.
Yeah, okay. He should work with Mike Love.
Oh God, imagine.
The Jim Steinman Mike Love album.
Mike Love and Meatloaf.
Finally.
Jesus Christ.
There's a resurrection right there. That's a whole bunch of resurrections. You've got Kokomo.
The Beach Boys, right.
You've got Brian's solo career. And, you know, performing Pet Sounds live on stage and you know, the ultimate pop culture resurrection would be the release of Smile.
Well, I was going to bring up Brian Wilson in a case that, like, I would feel like I'm probably 85-90% in favor of that comeback. Because I, you know, you can't figure out what the deal is with Brian's mental state. And most of the time, I think it's a great thing that he's back and creating music and writing music and singing again. But sometimes, you know, if you catch him on one of those nights where he's completely catatonic on stage and just looks, you know, sad. Like, he just doesn't look like just dead in the eyes. He looks sad sometimes. And it makes me wonder, you know, whether he's just a puppet with, you know, his wife's hand up his butt, you know?
I caught him on that first tour. He looked petrified.
Right, well, yeah, the that was what, like 99?
Yeah, he was behind that keyboard, you know, the one that's either not plugged in or not turned on.
Yeah, he's, well, I haven't seen him in a few years. But Ken Shane would be one to ask, because I know he saw him recently. But last time I saw him, he was still sitting behind the keyboard, but never playing it. Listen, I thought Smile was a great album. I was really happy to hear it, but I couldn't help but remember just a couple years back when Brian was, you know, I hate Smile, I'll never do anything with Smile, I don't want to talk about Smile, et cetera, et cetera. And suddenly he's all on board for it. And so,
yeah,
you know, it's great that it was released, and I'm sure he's happy with the music, but sometimes I just wonder, you know, if his wife said, you know what, you really do need to be getting back together with Mike Love, whether he would do it or, you know, if he would just do it because he's got other people kind of, I don't know, it's hard to tell what the behind the scenes is there. It makes me a little sad.
Me too. I think that Brian is a little like a kind of a drug-addled, slightly retarded version of Paul Simon. Increasingly, he needs some kind of hook to get him inspired to do something that doesn't really suck big time.
Right.
Like Smile or that stupid Christmas album. I mean, the last real, I guess there was that Lucky Old Son, which had him and Van Dyke together again. But, you know, you listen to Getting In Over My Head, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a sign. That album
once.
That's a guy who's just adrift. That's Brian Wilson's Cape Man right there. Just awful.
Yeah, that was a really bad album. That's the thing. It's like, you know, it's nice that he's out there and making music, and it's great that he's in front of an audience that adores him. But, and, you know, you'd think there'd be nothing better for someone like him who went through such difficulties to have an adoring audience screaming, "We love you, Brian," because I think the audiences, when they see him, I think they really do. They love him. And I think it's hard to be objective, for audiences to be objective, because they're just so grateful that he's back.
Yep. Right.
But he doesn't look like he's appreciating it, because I don't know if he's got the mental capacity to really appreciate it. So you can't tell if he's happy from it or not.
That's also probably something of a burden.
Yeah, that's probably true as well.
Okay, we've spent so much time talking about musicians who have been resurrected. Let's talk about some figures from outside the music industry. Jason,
Richard Nixon.
I'm all for you. I actually really, I failed here. I only really thought about music ones. I couldn't think of any good pop culture ones, and I figured you guys would come up with someone that would spark my memory on it.
How about John Travolta was the first name that came to my mind.
John Travolta. Oh, yeah, John Travolta. Good call. Good call. I'm giving you a clap for that.
And then he killed himself again with Battlefield Earth.
Yeah.
He got too big, right? He got too big for himself.
Well, what is the Scientologist's view of reincarnation? Is there one? I don't know anything about it, because, you know, he could have intentionally made that to have a second resurrection
just
later
so he
on
can
down the road.
Have a rebirth with old dogs. Mm-hmm. Or wasn't he in Wild Hogs too?
Yep.
Yeah.
Aren't they the same movie? I don't know.
But that really was a great touch by Tarantino, bringing him back for Pulp Fiction after he'd been lost for, you know what, 10 years or so?
Well, he had a slight mini comeback with Look Who's Talking. That was a big movie at the time.
Yeah, that's true. And that was 88, I think.
Something like that.
88 or 89. Yeah.
Yeah, so all right, so he was gone for 6 years. So it's like after Urban Cowboy, he didn't really do much after that, I think. So right. It was kind of like a mini thing, but...
Right, he probably did like, I mean, I don't know his career very well, but I'm guessing he probably did like direct-to-video stuff.
Probably, yeah.
Good call on John Travolta.
Thank you.
You got somebody, Jeff, other than Richard Nixon?
Other than Richard Nixon? I don't know. Dave and I talked about Vinny Testaverde, and I think Dave was of the opinion that Testaverde didn't really fit the description, but...
Am I supposed to know who that is?
What I think the quarterback who fit the mold better was Kerry Collins, in that he was a high draft choice, and you know he had a couple of good years with Jacksonville, then drank his way out of that job, then took the Giants to the Super Bowl, and had a few more bad years, and was you know Vince Young's backup at Tennessee, and when Vince Young kind of went batshit insane a couple of seasons ago, and Colin stepped in and did pretty well. So he's kind of like the that's more of a resurrection than I think Testaverde, who was always just kind of a bad to average NFL quarterback who maybe had a couple of good years and managed to keep a job long enough because he was willing to be a backup forever and just wait around for a guy to get injured.
I love Kerry Collins because you just have to look at him to know that he's probably functionally retarded. Like if you look, I know Jason, you don't know who we're talking about.
I don't, but I like when you say the words functionally retarded, so I laughed because I thought that was funny.
If you look up a picture of him, he's probably gonna have his mouth open. And plus he's an alcoholic, and I think he's also a Southerner, isn't he?
Yeah, I think so.
He's a good old Southern boy, mouth breather, alcoholic with a cannon for an arm. And so he was always just fun to watch play. My brothers and I would sit around, you know, pretending to be Kerry Collins as he was playing. We'd, you know, give me the ball, coach. I'll hook it up.
There have been very few quarterbacks I've ever seen who can technically throw the ball as well as Collins in terms of like that perfect spiral. But it's, you know, it's just the guy's head is not always in the game.
He doesn't have anything in his head.
Right, exactly. Well, I think the best thing that could be said about the main thing that Collins has on him besides having one of the worst ever Super Bowl performances, fuck you very much, Kerry Collins, was that he was not Ryan Leaf.
He was not Ryan Leaf. I think pretty much every quarterback gets credit for not being Ryan Leaf. Right?
Even Bubby Brister's like, shit, I'm not that guy. Jamarcus Russell could say, shit, I'm not Ryan Leaf. Here's a pop culture resurrection from that's been in the news fairly recently. The Democratic Party. Because they actually got something fucking done. And they were being written off after Scott Brown's election, and oh, it's never going to get done, they're lost, they're going to get their asses killed in the midterms, blah blah. And I was like, holy shit, these people actually kind of know what they're doing. Is this on? Hello.
I'm here.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess we have to give them credit for that. I don't know, the way that it all happened wasn't terribly inspiring. It seemed like they kind of slid ass backwards into healthcare reform despite their best efforts to fuck it up. I mean,
the majority of legislation gets done that way. It's just that nothing has been covered in this capacity before and inspired so much venom.
Yeah. I mean, that it would have been more satisfying if they had done it Bush style and just rammed it through without talking about it.
I did your mom Bush style and rammed it through.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, I was thinking, are we ever going to get to a mother joke in this episode?
Well, you know, anytime you hear the words, did it Bush style, there's got to be a mom joke around the corner.
We went to see a band last night. This had this guy, you know, guy with a great stand-up bass. He was slapping the hell out of it. I leaned over to Michael Parr and I said, that's how hard your mom likes it.
Maybe we should stick with acting so Jason knows what's going on.
Okay.
How about Mickey Rourke?
Yeah, I thought I actually did think about him, but I don't want to talk about Mickey Rourke because I hate Mickey Rourke. He doesn't seem like he deserves a comeback. And like it just disgusts me, you know, just the whole the industry. Like, I'm glad that he got the chance to make The Wrestler and that, you know, they took a chance on him. He took a chance on him for that movie and whatever. And now he's in Iron Man 2, and I'm like, oh, my God, this industry is just, you know, it's all dollar signs. It's like, well, no, it's not, you know, you're only as good as your last thing. And, you know, Mickey Rourke certainly burned his share of bridges, you know, in his career. But it's okay now because he made a lot of money and he, you know, with The Wrestler and everything like that. So now he's an Iron Man too.
How about Betty White? Does that make you happy?
It makes him horny.
I don't feel like Betty White ever really went away. She's experiencing a resurgence, but I wouldn't call it a comeback. Don't call it a comeback. Betty White's been here for years.
She's hosting Saturday Night Live.
I think that's awesome. But it's not like Betty White ever really went away. I mean, she did guest stars. I don't know. I guess I don't count her because I guess when I think of comeback, I think about people who are like trying to match a certain level in their career and just can't do it. And I feel like in those years where Betty White wasn't on TV, she was probably just fine and happy probably too. I'm very much looking forward to seeing Betty White on SNL though.
Okay, now how about something that you think should be in pop culture or in music that you think should make a comeback, a resurrection?
It's a jellyfish. Yeah. Although, I don't know if you can call that someone that I wish would come back or someone that I wish would reunite, but I would say Jellyfish would probably be my number one band that I wish would get back together. And, you know, they would not have any commercial success whatsoever.
Who cares?
Yeah, who cares?
Who has commercial success anymore?
Yes, exactly. Because the members are still at least, well, you can't tell what Andy Sturmer's doing because I don't think he's doing anything. But Roger Manning's still making good music, and Jason Faulkner's still making good music.
Yeah,
I would love to see another Jellyfish record.
Okay, what about you, Jeff?
Well, Jellyfish is a good one. I don't know if I could top that.
You can't.
I'd like it if Harry Nilsson was dug up out of the ground and reanimated somehow.
Sounds smelly.
Probably no less smelly than Harry Nilsson was before.
I'd like it if our friends at Rhino released the album that he was working on when he died.
Okay.
And you, Dave?
When I chose, I went outside music, and I said I'd like to see quality network television make a resurrection.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was just saying the other day that I'm really enjoying all the shows I'm watching right now. I'm laughing out loud more at the TV that I'm watching than I have in a long time.
But is it network shows or cable shows?
It's all network shows.
Okay.
It's
all? Really?
Yeah. Well, it's Modern Family, which I think is hysterical. It's Chuck. It's Community. 30 Rock and The Office. I'm not really laughing out loud at The Office. But Community, I frequently laugh out loud at. Modern Family, I think, is great. But that's just me.
Okay.
Are there certain types of shows that you're wishing for a return?
But just in general, just get rid of the Biggest Loser and bad reality shows and just like the real base stuff. I mean,
the genre is easy to pick on, but that one in particular actually serves a purpose.
Biggest Loser?
Okay.
Yeah,
I would agree with that, actually. I mean, I don't watch it, but I always thought that was a good idea for one. As opposed to, you know, I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, or
right,
Fear Factor.
I just think in our culture in general, the, you know, 25, 30 years ago, there was maybe a greater emphasis on the idea of what sells is intelligence.
Yeah.
You know, and you could also see that in music and in movies. You know, like the 70s were kind of a golden era for movies. And, you know, it's just not there.
But you also had stuff like Empty Nest and Punky Brewster.
Right. No, there's always been mainstream and mediocre stuff. But I take Empty Nest over the majority of sitcoms today. And obviously most of the stuff is going, the good stuff is going out to cable. I've seen a couple episodes of Bored to Death. I think that's great. You know, obviously the David Simon stuff, and I'm looking really forward to seeing what he's going to do with this new show. You know, those networks will take more chances, but the other four just seem to be so lost with an occasional good show.
I want to go back to the era where you could get stuff like Pink Lady and Jeff on
right.
Television.
Yeah, that was a perfect example of something that completely deflates my theory.
Misfits of science.
Yeah. Did people think like Punky Brewster was bad then, or
they must have?
Let's ask
Dave.
Dave, you were in your late 30s.
No, I'm not. I'm not in my late 30s.
No, you were in your late 30s then.
Oh, then that's what I was saying. Well, you could look at Punky Brewster as an example of a family sitcom. And there have always been those kind of bad family sitcoms that serve a purpose. And it served that purpose at that time.
Well, it's also a style of acting. We were talking about Family Ties yesterday. I was saying that I have a bunch of episodes on my iPod, and I enjoy them because I enjoyed them then, but they don't really hold up.
Oh, no, they're painful to watch.
Well, it's mainly because the type of acting is a type of acting that's really not on television anymore. It's, you know, that very overacted sitcom-y kind of acting, which is really...
theatrical acting in a small studio, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's one of the things that... when you look at Arrested Development and The Office, what they destroyed from a viewing perspective is the three-camera multi-shoot sitcom.
The laugh track, yeah.
Yeah.
Don't all CBS's sitcoms have laugh tracks, though?
Yes. Yeah, like you mean like Three and a Half Men and all that kind of stuff.
How I Met Your Mother, yeah.
How I Met Your Mother does. I'm trying to think if I watch any shows with a laugh track anymore. I don't think I do.
I can't watch any.
It's so fucking offensive.
This is going to be very obscure for most of our audience, but there's a band I used to love called Moxie Fruvis that I wish would come back. They were an a cappella pop band, slightly a cappella pop band, with great harmonies. They were like a college group in the 90s I guess it was just the 90s, 5 or 6 years. And they went on hiatus in 2000 or 2001, quote-unquote hiatus, but they're never going to get back together. And I wish they would get back together. They were fantastic.
And now it's time for the endorsement section of the podcast, where we talk about something that we've been listening to or recently discovered or just something that's been on our mind. Jason.
I don't know if I'll have a review up on Popdose by the time this goes live or at all.
Son of a bitch.
I just said that for you. The new Bare Naked Ladies album is called All in Good Time, and it's their first album without Steve Page as their co-lead singer. And I heard it, and at first I didn't really care for it, and I'm a little bit biased because I am a hardcore Bare Naked Ladies fan. And I would say in a nutshell that the album is definitely missing that relationship between Ed Robertson and Steve Page, who wrote most of the songs together from the band from their start up until a year or two ago. I would say that that's definitely missing a lot, and some of the songs that are on the album definitely wouldn't have made the album had he still been in the band. The band is a little bit more of a democratic machine now, with bassist Jim Cregan and keyboardist and guitarist and vocalist Kevin Hearn getting a little bit more time. But they still are... it's still a well-written, well-produced album with great, great hooks. And so I'm all in favor of Bare Naked Ladies continuing. I'm sad that Steven Page is no longer with them, but I love them, and I'm glad that they're still around. So if you like Bare Naked Ladies, if you're a fan more than just, you know, that moment in the 90s when they had their hit, so hopefully you don't, if you're that kind of person, you don't lump them in with, you know, like Marcy Playground and other one-hit wonder 90s bands. If you're a fan of Bare Naked Ladies, pick it up.
Saving it up, savoring every ounce of sunlight. Comes to be gradually, feels like overnight. So bundle up. understand that soon enough we'll wake up from such a daze. Thanks to all the many ways we're all pushing through for summertime.
Jeff?
I just read a book by a guy named David Grann called The Devil in Sherlock Holmes. Collection of nonfiction essays. This guy writes for The New Yorker, and I think most of these originally appeared there. But if you don't subscribe to The New Yorker, it's probably the most fascinating book I've ever read. It's this guy does everything from research the death, the suspicious death of the world's foremost Sherlock Holmes expert, to hop on a rickety little boat out of New Zealand and go searching for the giant squid. I forget exactly how many essays are in there. It's probably five or six, but they're all just excellent.
A couple of years ago, I went on a search for your mom's giant squid.
It isn't hard to find. You look on the side of any urinal in any major metro area, and there's a number that'll lead you right to it. That's how I found your mom's barnacles. Arr.
Arr.
Okay. Thar she blows.
Thar she blows. That's right.
That's right, because whenever I turn your mom over, she's like, call me Ishmael.
My body's strong, my will is weak. I got pretty nice arms, but I hate my beak. And the dolphins are all phonies. They seem nice enough at first, but they pretend to be your friend until they see you at your worst, and then they leave you without a word. They swim away. So I can't do that thing anymore. I can't be the thing I was before. Maybe I am better off alone, because I crush everything and I crush everything and I crush everything. And everything I want, I take. And everything I love, I bring. And every night I lie awake.
Okay, as you guys know, I'm a sucker for great power pop, and I'm always on the lookout for new bands. And a few months ago, one of our PopDose colleagues, David Metzger, forwarded a press release to the PopDose staff for a band out of Madison, Wisconsin, called Loxley. And they just released their second album called Be In Love, and it's pretty amazing, as is their first, which is called Don't Make Me Wait. It combines the hooks and melodicism that you expect from a power pop band, but I think what really sends them over the top is that they also add these doo-wop harmonies, kind of a little bit of rockabilly, a little bit of a 60s garage feel. Try to imagine Mitch Ryder and the Detroit Wheels playing Beatles songs, but without the organ. Also kind of sounds, or if you take like the jaded hipster vibe out of the Strokes and add a better vocal sound, then I think better quality songs, it's kind of got that feel to it. I saw them here this past Thursday, and they also deliver... They were just really great live. Sometimes, you know, power pop doesn't translate well in concert, especially in a small club, because, you know, they could be too busy recreating, too devoted to the idea of the perfect pop record that they don't have any energy live, or right. They could be too energetic live that they don't, they kind of skimp on the pleasures of the record. But no, it was all there. The harmonies were great. They were just having a blast up on stage. These guys were also at one point the backup band for Ray Davies on a recent tour. So that should give you an idea of how credible they are as musicians. It's just my power pop discovery of the year so far.
Baby, dry your eyes. I'm going to find a reason why. I'm going now, even though your arms are yes, I know. Well, if I feel you, I'm just dreaming. Maybe it's because, oh, baby, I'm leaving. Baby, I'm grieving. Well, I know you're crying.
Okay, and that's going to do it for this episode of the Pop Does Podcast. Go to popdoes.com every day for the latest pop cultural news, especially when a celebrity dies. We always seem to rise to the occasion when that happens, and we did that most recently with Alex Chilton. Our discussion of pop culture resurrections does not end here. If there are any that you feel that we missed, leave a comment in the show notes where you'll also find links to all the things that we talked about today and a link to the Facebook page for fans of the podcast. If you're new to the show, you can find the previous 7 episodes at iTunes. While there, please leave a review because it helps give the show greater exposure. And you can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/popdose. And we will be back next month. Jason and Jeff, what should we talk about for May?
What should we talk about for May? That's a good question. Well, hold on. Mother's Day.
You know what we're going to talk about. That's right, Mother's Day.
Game, set, match.
You heard it here first, everybody.
We'll see you next month.
See you next month.
See you next month, guys.
And I'll see your mom.
And your mother's.
I'd love to get our... It would actually be pretty funny to get our moms on the podcast.
Have our moms do the show instead of...
They seemed like such nice boys. It'd
be funny if our moms got on and was like, that's what I said when I flipped your son over.
I think that was the same day I put the... My status update was that I baptized the baby in whiskey and licorice. And
right.
A friend of my wife's got all concerned.
It would be funny. It would be funny if the concern was not whiskey and licorice, baptized. But baptized your baby.
She's like, "What does that mean? Oh, what do you think it means? I baptized. I dunked the kid in whiskey and licorice.
You drowned their sins in tooth decay.
There's a comeback I wish would happen."